Big short-term rentals.
Bob did a good clarification right at the end.
Got to the point.
Okay.
Good to go.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Economic Development Committee for July 1st. Our first order of business today is approval of the minutes from the June 3rd meeting.
Move to approve.
Second.
All right. We have an approval and a second. A motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes. Second item is public comments. Does anybody have a public comment related to economic development today? All right, seeing none, we will move on to item three, which is review of the development or redevelopment potential properties map. And I believe to help us with that, we have John Holliday, our business development manager.
Hi, good afternoon. Let me get right on into it. I wanted to go over a map that was presented to the mayor's economic development panel. And what I did on this, when I started this project, the map was created for the mayor's panel, but it includes local business leaders to help guide our economic development efforts. So I wanted to create a map that would include properties that are currently available on the market through the Commercial Multiple Listing Service, or CMLS. And my intent was to link the town of Mount Pleasant's Geographical Information System, or GIS, to link that mapping to the CMLS to have a real-time view of available commercial properties. So after exploring this route, it was determined really that the existing CMLS system already serves this purpose very well, and the CMLS information is designed to be provided by licensed commercial real estate brokers. So really this is understandable as this is the best way for many small businesses to enter the commercial real estate market, you know, hooking up with a commercial broker. They have access to not only available properties, but the demographics just to help them be able to find just the right location. So this map may contain properties not currently for sale, so I want you to keep that in mind, and perhaps the owner has no intent of even selling the property at this time. This map was developed with help from our town's planning department. So as you can see, there are properties in blue, different ones around, like down here. Around, those are the development opportunities.
John, when you're pointing, even though it should be intuitive, maybe it's not for some of us, can you tell us where we are looking at, like there?
Right here is the Patriots Point area.
Okay.
So when you come down the bridge, you know, and then as you get further out, and then you've got the redevelopment opportunities, which would be existing properties that could be developed, may not currently be on the market, may never be on the market in the foreseeable future. But what we'd like to be able to do is have properties identified that when a business wants to locate somewhere, that we have we give them the opportunity to at least talk with the owner of the property and make that decision at that time. So really, this is not intended to replace the use of CMLS or the brokers. It's really to supplement what they're already doing, be able to give them an opportunity to look at what properties are for sale that's on the market, and if they can't find things that are right within the market, then be able to look at things that aren't on the market that maybe perhaps they can make an offer on and talk to the owner and see if there's any interest there. So that's what this is all about. So as I started, when a business wants to locate in Mount Pleasant, they typically want the fastest way to go from concept to ribbon cutting. So this is why my initial focus has really been on to identify the properties highlighted in yellow and where the potential redevelopment properties are. So as you look across, and again, I want you, these properties may not be for sale. Let's see if I can get, for some reason, my mouse is not able to point on these. But anyway, these properties are already developed and can be redeveloped much faster than starting with an empty parcel. So that's why I really wanted to start with these redevelopment opportunities. Typically, the permitting can be faster. The impact fees usually would not be as great since the fee is based on the difference between the former business and the new business. So in this view, I focused on properties with redevelopment potential that are near the bridge, as this provides a prime location for our targeted economic development businesses, such as information technology, specialty logistics, software development, project management, and corporate headquarters. This location is desirable due to its proximity to downtown Charleston, and it cuts down a lot on the traffic. People don't have to be traveling up and down 17 or Coleman. So a few locations close to the bridge, prime locations. I wish this thing would give me a map. But anyway, the one that's highlighted with number one is Harbor Point Apartments. That's 32.6 acres right there, and it's very close to the bridge. So it's not for sale, but perhaps at some point in the future, if the owners are interested, it could be redeveloped in like an office space campus. Be a nice, a lot of space up in there. Number six is the Plaza at East Cooper. It's on 9.1 acres. It's got the Aldi shopping center there. Nine, which is closer to the bridge, is Village Point Shopping Center right across the street from us. That's 7.6 acres. And Cinnabar, number 10, it's got 7 acres on Houston Northcutt. So those are prime redevelopment properties close to what we're looking for. At some point in the future, they may be able to be redeveloped.
Can I jump in on something? On the Harbor Point Associates, which is that part, 32 acres, number one there.
Yes.
I just recently heard, I think that they're down to like 50% occupancy. Does that sound about right? I'm hearing the occupancy is really low at this point.
I didn't know it was that low, but yeah. So that might up their interest in wanting to. If somebody came in with a good offer, who knows?
Especially if somebody, a good example, when you're so close to downtown, I'm thinking like millennials and Gen Zers who want to try to find a place, but maybe that apartment, I haven't been to it, but maybe that apartment complex is getting a little more run down or something. I don't know why it's 50% occupancy, but that's pretty low. It would be really nice to see that redeveloped into something that may be more competitive pricing for young people and a great location, and you're not causing us to take any green space away. It's already apartments.
Yeah, and that kind of acreage that close to the bridge is not common. So,
thank you.
Number five here, as you know, Ferry Wharf is under construction up by the bridge, and in that is a five-story portside office building. You and I went in there, Kathy, and very nice office. This under construction. It's got an Embassy Suites Hotel and a boutique hotel, parking garage, and retail and residential areas planned for that. It's going to be a real nice development. So when you look at the blue area, that's the potential and planned development in the Patriots Point area. It's going to be a lot of development going on. It's currently a 99-year lease between Patriots Point Development Authority for mixed-use development by Bennett Hospitality. It includes restaurants, shops, office buildings, an amphitheater, and a hotel. Very nice hotel. Other parts of the land might be developed on down the road, but the land's under easement by the DNR until at least 2023 right now. So there's a lot of property, prime real estate right in there that's we get one chance to do this right on that property, and it's I think we've got the right developer in there that can pull it off and make it look nice down there, have something we can all be proud of.
Again, just a question. That clearly includes the land that is the National Medal of Honor Museum site. Again, we all know there's a lot of things going on there, but isn't that where the crook in the road is, the turn in the road sort of like to the left there, isn't that pretty much where that is?
Backward, yes. Mm-hmm.
So right now that's still part of Mike Bennett's lease? I thought that was actually up in, I thought it's PPDA with the state.
Yeah, my understanding was that since it fell through with mm-hmm. the national group, that it reverted back to Patriots Point Development Authority. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that there was any option in the larger agreement with Mr. Bennett that sent that land over to for his use if that agreement were to have fallen apart. So I think it's still retained by Patriots Point.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure that was clear. Thank you.
Let me see if I can reset this thing so it'll be, I can finally get where I can use my mouse. It'll help things a bit. Oops, didn't mean to go over to the beginning, but all right. There you go. Got it back. All right. Any other questions about that? All right. The other part, you know, the town of Mount Pleasant recognizes significant economic development opportunity and the relocation of the South Carolina Ports Authority headquarters to the Wando Welch Terminal. The port of the Charleston has a $53 billion impact, annual impact to the state of South Carolina, has been named the most productive port in the United States. So with desire companies looking to locate near and around this important infrastructure, especially around the headquarters of the operations, this creates a competitive advantage the town hasn't had before. As you know, the town seeks to create a favorable and impactful experience when exiting 526, so when you come in, one in which is unmistakable. They arrived at state headquarters for the Ports Authority, and that's a place for industry and economic opportunity. So this slide shows a few parcels near the port that are available, that could be available. And but there's a lot of unincorporated Charleston County area down there. So, but I do know of a commercial property that is available that is looking to develop a Class A office space. So to house businesses where proximity to the port is important. So.
Oh, could you go back one more time?
Sure.
Likewise, if we go to the my right, your left, I guess, with the two blue parallel pieces of property over there. No. To your, okay.
Oh, here.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
That's the one. Please.
So the one on that side, this is Bell Point Road, correct? Okay, so that's the property that we know is being considered right now for some work. Chick-fil-A is right at the front of that.
Yeah.
I think there's already something being done next to the Chick-fil-A. Do you know about that, Eric, Mr. DeMar?
Man, I can't.
Something going on because they're clearing it already. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I'm not aware of anything. Please clean up.
There are some approved development plans for some of that property. So it's been in the works.
Is it something that can be talked about now or no?
I thought it was just general cleanup. No. Not in the town of Mount Pleasant.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure how that could happen without the sewer issue being resolved. I have anything.
Okay.
I thought it was just general cleanup.
So far general cleanup. Okay. Yeah, we need an annexation request if we're going to have
that. Question for John. So looking at those two blue parcels there in the center of the screen, you said those are perhaps opportunities for future development. What differentiates those parcels from any of the other parcels down that area that are warehouse, or how do you determine what's kind of ripe for economic development versus another one that may not be?
Well, some of them, there's not a lot of land down there, but so that's, those parcels are just the right size that I was looking for having an economic development project. There's another 4-acre parcel that's not shown on there because it's not in the, it's in the county. And it's something that could, you know, when I'm looking at economic development projects, looking at something we could put an office space on of sizable, you know, that, you know, good 4 acres or so.
So those are vacant parcels right now.
Yes.
You could start building on.
That's, they could build on them and all. Okay. Yes.
And they're already in the town versus some of these others that are unincorporated. Well, that's unincorporated. The other blue is unincorporated still. That one.
Yeah.
That one over there. Okay. And then the green are the ones that's already some sort of building, but you're thinking can be repurposed.
Yes. Or what, yellow. Yeah.
What is that yellowish? That yellowish. Chartreuse.
Yeah. Then there's a great, what is that great right property now? Right here.
What's the chartreuse?
I can't remember what that particular spot is right there.
Okay.
So. All right. Any other questions on that? All right. So now we'll move into...
Yeah. Okay. Is that, so that's all we have
business
on that?
Business licenses.
Does anybody have any other questions on the map before John moves on to the next item? Okay. So, so just in conclusion, identifying these properties and being aware of them, we feel like might help us be more proactive on talking to developers and potential businesses.
Absolutely. As you know, we hear a lot of times there's no land available, and there is land after doing this project. We see that there is land available, and one of the things that I would like to be able to do is to, first of all, try to show them redevelopment opportunities, because I think that's really important to be able to try to redevelop first, if we possibly can, and it actually gets them up to speed. It gets them in business faster, because there's so much money that goes out as you're trying to start a new business and trying to – you go from ground up, and the impact fees are a lot less if you're redeveloping instead of going from ground up. So
I would add, so in a way I'd call that like low-hanging fruit. It's a lot easier to do something with. I would add also, because I just had a lady tell me out in the hallway that she said, my husband has a such-and-such business, and he'd really like to move it here to Mount Pleasant, but he's so afraid of impact fees, he's so afraid of whatever. And I said, well, get with us on, you know, with the business development, because we're often aware of something that's been recently vacated and or something that might be moving to some other spot, a bigger location or whatever, and might become available. So I think this is just opening up lines of communication. How many times do you hear, well, they didn't do this because of this or this, and actually it was something we could have helped with? So.
Yeah, and when you look at the impact fees, it's calculated on what the previous purpose was compared to the new purpose. It might be minimal impact fee.
Or none in some cases. So.
Yeah.
Thank you, John. That's great.
Okay, this might be a silly question, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway. So when you talk to folks about potential opportunities, I have to admit I have a little discomfort sitting here talking about an apartment complex as a potential redevelopment opportunity or a Village Point shopping center, places that are currently in business, and yet we talk to them like they are opportunities for something better to come along. I mean, how do you, when you're talking to someone who wants to come into the town, how do you talk about existing businesses without feeling like you're talking about, you know, someone on their deathbed? And, well, it feels uncomfortable to me that we're talking about viable businesses that are going on now as potential for, hey, you know, this could be something better. So, I mean, can you talk a little bit about how you couch that conversation? Because I'm feeling a little discomfort with it.
I think, you know, if you're in business, you're looking for opportunities. And certainly if you own a shopping center or an apartment complex, you know, if there's a, you know, if everything has a value. And if someone comes in with the right amount, I mean, then it might be a good deal for the owner. And it might be a good deal for the buyer. So, you know, I think the things that are on the market are going to have certain – you're going to have a certain amount of properties that's on the market. But there's certain ones that are not on the market that we look at and say perhaps it could be purchased for the right price. And when you're looking at the apartment complex, if they got a 50% occupancy, which you said,
I don't know if that's correct.
Or whatever, then you know, they might be motivated to have a better. Maybe they want to sell that and put their business into money into a different type of business or a different apartment complex or something.
So these businesses are not feeling slighted or offended by us talking about them as potential redevelopment opportunities.
Well, I mean, I guess. I think it's open communication with, you know, you know, it's like anything, everything's got a value on it. I don't think it's, and certainly they can redevelop their own property as well. So it's not something that I think we need to shy away from.
If I could add, because I've heard some of the conversations along these lines, it's really not about saying, hey, somebody can do this better than you're doing it. It might actually be, hey, somebody has an idea and they might want to partner with the current person. But if nobody talks about it, they might just be on whatever, however expression you want to say. You said deathbed, I'll say life support. Maybe they're getting by, but they could be doing a lot better if somebody partnered up with them. So it's kind of trying to just open up much more proactive communication between the town as the facilitator of it, and especially since we're involved with the licenses, the impact fees, et cetera, and the businesses themselves who, let's face it, want to make a profit and also provide services to our citizens.
You know, and help them see that their property could be more than it is, and give them a reason to say, hey, you know, we're gonna put money. You know, if it's a national builder or developer, they may say, well, we're gonna put money into that to bring it up to speed. So because maybe they don't realize the value that it has. So so I think the open communication with the businesses and owners will, and developers will help everybody. So,
thank you.
So, okay, so moving on then to the next item is item number 4, continued discussion regarding business licenses and impact fees. And this came up last month. In fact, actually, Councilman Brimmer was one of the ones that was asking if we could have some of the numbers of home-based businesses versus and their licenses and then impact fees for large employers versus small businesses. So, John, if you could take it away.
Well, absolutely. So, for there's a couple of points in time that we want to point out. This mouse is still messing with me. All right, July 2017 was when the impact fees were implemented. It was implemented with a 50% discount. The discount was reduced in January of 2018 to 35% with a final discount of 20% in July 2018. And so as you're looking at total home-based businesses, they really don't have any impact. The impact fees don't have any impact on the home-based businesses because they don't pay impact fees. They're out of their home. So, but when you look at the number of total home business licenses by year, you can see it's gone from 349 to 353 to 362. So the home-based businesses are strong and it's growing, showing a healthy home-based business market. When I look at larger businesses, and I identified larger businesses as ones that have 10 employees or more, and when you look at that, it's, let's try to get the mouse to work. All right, there it goes. All right, in this area, we've got a very steady number of business licenses over three years. And that was through three different impact fee increments. So when you look at, let's compare on July 2017 to July 2018, we saw an increase in business licenses. And the same for August when you're comparing that. Not really seeing a correlation between the two. And it's not having any impact in the number of businesses coming in, the impact fees. That's what I'm seeing here on that.
Well, it kind of looks like from the point that you know, another way of saying a 20% discount of the total that could be legally allowed is saying 80% of the legal allowable amount.
There you go.
So with an impact fee of that, it looks like July, maybe people were trying to get in before, but maybe they hit right in July. They didn't get in quite before. And then it actually did fall off quite a bit into the fall, but that could be a seasonal thing as well. But then when you go back to this year with the dark green, I guess we'll call that dark green or whatever. Anyway, that color, it looks like it sort of has trended more, I don't know, I'm going to call that sideways, but definitely consistently there. What do you think?
Yeah. And so really not seeing a whole lot of impact when you start getting into 2019. You know, May does look low, but, I mean, really looking at the difference between 12 and 9. So while it looks big, between here and here, it's only three businesses. So
what size are we calling a larger business?
I said 10 employees or more.
As opposed to a home-based. Okay, so that's still a really small business. But.
And then the next slide shows more of the small businesses. So, and, you know, the small businesses, if there was some impact to the numbers of businesses, they would be affected probably more so than the large economic development projects, because we have programs to offset some of the impact fees for the economic development projects. But not all the large businesses get that offset. So when you look at small businesses, it's kind of the same story. A growing small business number of licenses issued per year. And when you look at July to July, 2017 to 18, there's an increase. There's an increase there. Kind of the same story. It falls off a little bit, back up. And then 2019, January 2019 was strong. And it just continues to be strong. So I'm not seeing where the impact fees are really causing our shrinking business economy here in Mount Pleasant.
Can you go back one more time to the large businesses? So would you say if we had that number for the halfway point, I know it just happened yesterday, but would it be, if we look at these numbers, would we say it's probably about the same? It looks like it might actually be almost the same. Maybe a little bit less.
For which month?
For the first half of this year.
Yeah.
Maybe a little less.
Maybe looks a little bit less, and that might just be different market factors.
Okay.
So when you look at all businesses, I just combined all home base, large, small, everything. When you look at the year, it's going in a positive direction, number of business licenses. And when you look at 2019, January was high, February was right in there. You know, I don't see anything. May of 2018 must just been a great month, because it seemed like like you said, people trying to get in before that that impact fee went up last year. Mm-hmm. So, I guess it did go up. The discount went down. So that might have just been an anomaly there. So, but when you look at July to July, we're actually from 2017 to 2018, it increased. So, not seeing a lot of impact to the impact fees to business licenses on that correlation there. So
it does look to me, though, and I would need to do something with this, but it looks like your 2019 numbers in all of these charts have a downward trend. If you put a trend line on the 2019, I think they're all going to show a decrease. The question I would have then, is that decrease because it is a cyclical decrease based on the time of the year, because we only have half the year here? Or is it something else going on? But certainly 16, 17, and 18, there are increases. But I think if you put a trend line on 19, you're going to see a different trend line. And I think that needs maybe some further looking at, because I'm concerned that from a budget standpoint, if we're starting to see a downward trend, we need to intervene early rather than wait until the end of the year. So that might be something to maybe put a trend line on and see if it's how steep that is. I think the trend line for the 3 years is probably going to look good. But if you isolate the last year, the last 6 months, I think that's going to look very differently. So you may want to take a closer look at that.
Sure.
Well, yeah, especially since July last year, right? Also, another point on this is I've encountered several times, and again, I'm not sure, Mr. Jamara, who it is that figures these things out, whether it's planning or who does this or maybe the permitting folks, but I'm running into people where they feel that the category they're put in may not be the right one for them. And it's all about transportation impact is one of the biggest things. Obviously, water, sewer is separate from us. And so I think it's going to be really important, especially now that we do have, if we do see, as Councilman Brimmer has said, a downtrend of any type, especially if you look at it more over time, that we want to make sure we're looking at these things. Because if a business is categorized a certain way and is charged a certain amount and they figure out, hey, we could be in North Charleston or West Ashley or somewhere else and pay a whole lot less because they don't have, let's say for expansion as an example, let's just make sure we're giving them every benefit of the doubt within reason.
And if Ms. Landing, if for anyone you run into like that, please encourage them to contact us about that. The code that we operate in, the NAICS system, is nationwide. So it's either one category or another. There have been times on occasion, luckily not too often, where we found a company that was misplaced, and we've acted immediately to correct that and provide any refunds if necessary. But please direct them our way. We'll say, in relation to some of the business licenses, construction is a major part of our local economy, and that's been down for us. I get weekly reports through Christiane from the planning department showing single-family housing, townhomes, commercial, and it's down. But budgetarily, because you're saying let's deal with it if we have to up front, budgetarily we've accounted for a slowdown in that sector. And but that may, John may have more information than me, but when I see that number, I think construction industry, because all of those subcontractors aren't pulling business licenses. Yeah. Not all of them. A good portion of them are no longer pulling business licenses because there's less work.
Yeah. Those trends we've been talking about for years are finally here.
Yes.
And so we've got to address that. And that's why drilling down a little bit more on this. And John, I would just ask that, you know, because my life is so exciting outside of council, if you could send me the file with this information, I'd like to play around with it a little bit.
Sure.
Maybe look at it some different ways. That would just be so much fun. So thank you.
You're welcome to do that.
Good and, analytical project.
You know.
And I did run a kind of along the same lines what you're talking about. Since I had data for from July through May, I ran the last 3 years from July through May, and it is a bit softening when I look at the past 3 years. But I didn't want to I'd like the year to finish out, get the June numbers in and see how that came in. Before I really, but so far it looks like just a little bit of softening in the economy on business licenses. So. Yeah.
That's why I don't think the trend lines are going to be significant, but they're going to be, I think, show us that there is a beginning of a trend, probably a downward trend.
Yeah. One of the things in this, it's appropriate because we are talking about business licenses and impact fees. We had this grave concern about traffic congestion, perhaps way too fast growth, not perhaps, I think most people would agree, way too fast residential growth that wasn't kept up with from infrastructure and so forth. And then things like when you calculate impact fees for anything, residential or a business, it's a lot of it's based on car trips and how many people are coming and going and all of that. But I still say, and I know I've heard other people say this, and I've read this in Suburban Nation and a lot of other guidelines on how to plan a town well, that when you have a business that employs your people closer to home, that it actually decreases the impact of car trips. But it seems like that's not being accounted for in the way we're doing this. I could be wrong, and you can maybe answer to that, because if we can keep people from, let's just use the example of something that, say, annexes into the town and is before you get on 526, and those people would have been driving on 526 from Mount Pleasant up to Boeing or up to North Charleston or up to somewhere else, and instead they can stop right there and they can work there. Now, yes, that business might have 300 employees, and so therefore there might be X number of car trips associated with it, but how much did they impact the congestion on the roads to decrease because they didn't have to go onto 526. So how do we account for those kind of things?
We don't track it. In fact, the commercial projects are really only one project. But yet the impact of that one project could mean, I'm making this up, could be the equivalent of hundreds or scores of other areas that we do track. So it's a small portion. So it's we'd have to flush them out of these numbers to see it.
Because another example, and again, this does come from reading. This isn't just off the top of my head. When you build a residential neighborhood and you have 200 homes, theoretically you might have 400 to 500 cars that are now generated from those people living, or more, who knows, coming from those homes, and therefore that's 400 to 500 more cars on the road in Mount Pleasant. When you build a business with say 200 people employed, you might not be adding a single car to the road. You actually might be shortening car trips, most likely are, and you might actually be, that business is not generating a car. Unless somebody's living there overnight, you know, they might bring their sleeping bag because they work too hard or something. But for the most part, that business is not generating cars or trucks necessarily, unless it happens to be a logistics delivery business. So where I'm going with this is I think we do need to think about these things, because I do think we have to treat businesses. I know there's legal things that tell us we have to treat commercial businesses like residential, but the reality on the ground is that that business doesn't necessarily create the same impact on our roads that the residential would have. Yes.
If I may. Please. Actually, businesses do create trips, because they create trips not from the business, but to the business.
Oh, I'm real aware of that.
Yeah.
But they don't create cars. People aren't living there to leave each day. If somebody.
But they are there to attract cars to there, because if they don't attract cars, occupants of the cars don't get out and walk into the business and buy things or contract the things. So businesses do create cars, car trips to the business.
True. If you have a business that's my example on Long Point Road, I'm just using Long Point Road because we had a picture of it, Long Point Road before you get to 526 entrance, and it's right there, like that land that Mr. Holliday was pointing out that's available as land to develop. And the alternative was that a car would leave Mount Pleasant from whatever residential area and drive up 526 off to somewhere else to work. Wouldn't you agree it's less traffic created by being able to stop right there at that?
Well, it's not less traffic created. It's they have shorter trips.
Right.
But it doesn't, a car still, I mean, if cars don't get on the road, that business isn't going to survive.
True. Anyway, I think we're still making a point here that we may want to look at the true impact that's not just measured by the car trips back and forth. And I don't know how you do that. And maybe it's not possible to do that, but I think we need to think about that.
You know, and for the businesses that have high enough wages and all, the employees can afford to live in Mount Pleasant, and they're qualified as an economic development project, then we do have offsets for impact fees because they shouldn't be clogging up the roads as much. You know, the employees won't have to drive outside the area. And so... So that's definitely why we put that in for economic development projects. So,
was that it, John?
One more thing on bandwidth and Wi-Fi coverage.
Next item. Okay, anything
else
on number four?
No.
Okay, so moving on to number five, discussion regarding bandwidth needs and Wi-Fi coverage for businesses.
All right.
It's all on you today.
All right, yeah. All right, well... Mount Pleasant's a competitive market for wireless broadband providers, and the good news is that 100% of Mount Pleasant's population and geographical area is covered by a 4G network, and this 4G technology allows download speeds up to about 50 megabits per second. In the near future, Mount Pleasant's going to have 5G access. As a latest step forward in cellular network evolution, 5G will see small antennas, we call small cells, deployed on the cell towers, utility poles, lamp posts, streetlights, and buildings. The technology, which is designed to supplement rather than replace current 4G networks, may accelerate cellular data transfer speeds to 1 gigabit per second and beyond. Some say up to 10 gigabits. So what this will do will be a massive boost that will make the next generation wireless competitive with even the fastest fiber optic networks. So it'll be available without even in places where fiber's not run, that they'll have access to that gigabit per second speed, which is huge. Next slide. When
just talking about municipalities, when the market fails to provide the bandwidth that a community needs, some municipalities are deploying all-fiber broadband networks for their residents and businesses to stimulate economic growth and development. Fiber optic provides ultra-high-speed internet and is leaps and bounds faster than traditional cable internet and provides speeds up to 1 gigabit per second and beyond, which allows fast data backup, file sharing, and multiple users, which is important to businesses. The market in Mount Pleasant is competitive, and market forces are already driving the fiber deployment, so we don't need to manage that. It's the market is driving it by itself. So per my discussions with technical engineers, most of Mount Pleasant's business district is covered by fiber optic internet availability. So that includes the business district of along Johnny Dodds Boulevard, Highway 17, Long Point Road, Coleman Boulevard, and Town Center and Bell Hall Shopping Centers. So, and where it's not, if it's not available, they're willing to bring it in for a business and get them the speeds that they need. So the good thing is that it looks like we're very well covered now, and that when 5G on the horizon, Mount Pleasant's going to really be able to bring in the type of economic development industries that we're looking for, which is, you know, IT, software, corporate headquarters, a lot of data transfer. So that's kind of businesses we want, and I believe we're wired for business now for that. So,
do we have an estimate on when it's coming? I mean, I know that's a broader question, but
I know it just got passed recently, and I'm not sure what the implementation, how long that. You know, Eric, how long that implementation will be?
We'll start seeing it within the next several months. I mean, 3 to 4 months, you'll start seeing some of their projects come into effect.
So. Okay. Mm-hmm. And do we know, do we have any competitive advantage in that? I mean, we have other things, but in that versus other areas of the market? Like, are we going to have it faster or we're more prepared?
I think so. I think they recognize this as really an important market. Mm-hmm. The service demands here are pretty significant, and which provides them opportunities that help their business. So in conversations that I've had, they plan to distribute the products as quickly as possible.
Okay.
And the technical guys from AT&T have volunteered to come in for our August meeting.
Good.
I'd asked some of them to be here today, and then they had some conflicts, so we just talked on the phone conflict.